On the Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.
A couple of people still using that about our discussion about Golfgate and whether there was something of an overreaction. Barry has been in touch to say, ah, lads, there's no need to intellectualise Golfgate compared to the Foreign Affairs photo. One was a group of workers taking a stupid photo while they were all at work. The other was a group of privileged people having a jolly up, and Phil Hogan's drip feeding of facts didn't help either. And Northside Dub says that all of the stories that we mentioned were big stories, but it just depended on how hard the media was willing to push. The them and us, the arrogance, the elite. More people should have lost their jobs and careers, this person says. We need to have more of those gotcha moments that another one of our texters was complaining about. Do let us know what you think. Was Golfgate all a little bit of an overreaction, or has there now been a little bit of historical rewriting in the light of the court findings? 53106 for your texts, or On the Record NT, as I said, the hashtag on Twitter. Now, as we know, there has been ongoing controversy over the proposals that the government is bringing forward about how to address the claims brought by the Women of Honour, former members of the Defence Forces who claim to have been the victim of sexual aggression, or in many cases sexual assault, while they were on duty in Ireland's Defence Forces. The government has not ruled out a statutory commission of inquiry to get to the bottom of exactly what happened to those women, but it has in the interim proposed a non-statutory investigation to try and at least have some sort of scoping inquiry. That's not going to be the end of the matter though. This week Sinn Féin will use its dull time to press officially for a commission of investigation into the whole affair. We're joined now on the line by the party's defence spokesperson, Circa Clark. Circa, thanks for talking to us this lunchtime. First of all, can you just explain exactly what your motion this week is actually looking for?
Good afternoon, Gavin. Our PMB time this Tuesday evening will be used to call for a full statutory inquiry into the allegations as raised by the Women of Honour into the internal system of righting a wrong, and also asking for the government to re-engage with the representatives of the Women of Honour to create a fit-for-purpose terms of reference and to provide for adequate scope in dealing with the issues. The review as put forward by the Minister, while there is no question of those tasks to carry out that review, the real issues present in the terms of reference. Now, we fundamentally agree with the Women of Honour that there are serious flaws there. But we're also asking for the government to commit to a zero tolerance approach on workplace bullying, harassment and discrimination, assault and sexual assault. Because when we look at the Defence Forces as a workplace and as a whole, and what it is that we ask of them to do both at home and abroad, we do have a legal obligation, but we also have a moral obligation to ensure that those who serve the state and protect us at home and serve abroad are them too themselves protected. And in my opinion, the terms of reference as put forward by Minister Coveney just simply are going to fall way short of what's required to see that systemic and that fundamental change being put in place.
Do you think that you're likely to actually change the government's mind on this? Because obviously various representatives of Women of Honour, and I know that they're now broken into sort of multiple groups, but that multiple groups have met with Simon Coveney. At least one of the groups has met with Micheál Martin, and they are leaving the door open to a full statutory commission. But they say that having at least this first inquiry will be a good way to figure out exactly what the terms of reference for that need to be. So they don't seem likely to change their minds.
Well, if we look at the terms of reference as they stand at the moment, and the three overall aims of it, the first one is in relation to frameworks. Now, Minister Coveney himself has said that they are not functional and they are not meeting the need at the moment, and he has said so himself in the Dáil. And the second one around the culture, he has acknowledged also that that isn't functioning the way that it should be. So then we're down to the very last overall objective, which is recommendations and guidance. Now, my opinion would be that that is something that could be done in tandem with a statutory inquiry, and should and possibly could be done through the HR and departmental structures. And if it was a case of needing to strengthen the resources of the military police or the director of military prosecution, well, that can be done outside of this review. One of the fundamental problems with this review is that there is no compellability. The outcome itself will rely on voluntary interactions and the goodwill, essentially. So it can't possibly deliver on the full extent of the issues that the Women of Honour and other groups have raised there around the incidents themselves, which are absolutely horrendous when you hear of them. I don't think there was any of us who listened to that documentary in September that didn't come away with a really unsettled feeling and an abject horror of what it was that these women had gone through, but also what happens afterwards and the complaints process that's in place and the culture of almost coercion of silencing people, and that needs to be addressed. But we cannot have a situation, Gavin, where those who are serving in the Defence Forces now will serve in the future cannot rely on the systems in place to meet their complaints adequately if they need to.
Sure.
That's just gross.
And I think everyone wants there to be an appropriate means through which people can raise those concerns. And if they have them in the victim of serious egregious behaviour, they should, of course, be able to bring that up. But I'm looking at the terms of reference for the inquiry as the government has proposed. And one of the things that's there is to examine the end-to-end process for making a complaint of unacceptable behaviour and to assess whether there are any barriers to serving personnel from making a complaint and fully and actively engaging in the process and making appropriate recommendations. That on the face of it seems like it addresses the things you're looking for.
No, but it doesn't, because what the government has failed to do is actually give a commitment that to act on a recommendation, even if this panel can make a recommendation of further action required by government, the failure on the part of government to actually commit to doing that is where there is another issue that's here. And if you go back to those terms of reference, one particularly says the names of those who participate in the review will remain anonymous and there will be no factual or legal findings made in relation to any specific case. Now, I raised this with Minister Coveney last year. We know there has been settlements made with the Department of Defence and individuals who have served. But as part of those settlements, they included non-disclosure agreements. Now, once a non-disclosure agreement is put in place, that person is precluded from engaging in any form of review.
People who have raised some of these concerns have reached compensation deals with the Department of Defence, but only on the explicit condition that they don't talk about it afterwards.
Well, there is non-disclosure agreements in place for settlements made with the Department of Defence and Britain and in many other instances. But
do we know how many of those there's been, Circa? Because I think that's probably news to a lot of people listening this lunchtime.
Exactly, and that's where the issue lies, Gavin. It's actually not possible to get the extent of that because of the non-disclosure agreement that's in place. We can't ask individuals have they made a settlement because of the non-disclosure agreement. The minister won't admit to it.
But well, do we know for certain then that there are any? If there aren't any even disclosure for that, do we know for certain that any have actually been signed?
We would know from what we are hearing that they have been signed, but
okay,
also
so
we know
there are some, but we just have no idea.
But let me just finish this point, Gavin. What we also know is that if you look at the Department of Defence legal expenditure in the last round of estimates, they increased significantly. So there are legal actions taking place because the Department of Defence are defending each and every one of them.
Okay. Another one of the terms of reference, as the government proposes, is to examine the extent to which reprisal or the fear of reprisal or the existence of any culture of silence or complicity may act as a barrier to reporting or investigating, as well as the indication of inconsistencies or challenges in the application of policies. Does that also not go as far as it looks on paper? Because again, it seems on the face of it that it would examine some of the cultures of not reporting and not being able to get to the bottom and having fair justice for these people.
It still falls short of what the Women of Honour are asking for. That is a process that could be undertaken by the Minister and the Department through the internal structures that are there at the moment. The ask of the Women of Honour is very clear. They want a statutory inquiry to be able to get to the full detail of what has happened. And if you listen to people like Corina Molloy, hers were in a lot of ways very historic. I think she mentioned 30 years. There's others that are a lot more current. And there are lessons that need to be learned from that, because it's unfair for those who are in the Defence Forces now, who have been in the past and will serve in the future, for this to be dragged out much longer than what needs to be done. Ireland isn't the only country where this has happened. There has been issues across the world in relation to this almost misogynistic approach in some cases, and to assault, and to sexual assault. But it's how we deal with it from here. We need to be able to draw a line underneath this at some point, and to give confidence to those who will serve, and justice to those who have served but have had negative experiences, that the Defence Forces will change, is capable of change, and will be a place where if you choose to serve this state, that you will too be protected.
I don't think anyone would disagree with the idea that justice delayed is justice denied, and everyone wants to get to a conclusion as efficiently as they think they can. I think where the difference probably is between yourself and the government is what's the best way to go about that. Because, for example, again, the government is talking about having the final report from this first preliminary inquiry will be due back within 12 months of the whole thing getting going. And we do have a history where if you go straight to a commission of investigation, that sometimes, no matter how much you try to refine the terms of reference or how narrow you try to define them, that they can run on for years more than anyone ever expected. We still don't have, you know, the report in, from the sale of SiteServe by IBRC. That was commissioned years ago. It's years overdue. We don't have it yet. We don't have the full commission investigation into the handling of the Grace case. You know, there are so many other issues which are, we thought would be short, end up being very long. And is there not a danger that if you start to statutory commission into historical allegations in the Defence Forces, absolutely worthy though the topic may be, that you'll only then find yourself dragged down into a morass for years unless you make sure that you're investigating the right things and the terms of reference are down to scratch?
And there is a valid point there regarding the speed and effectiveness or completeness. However, I'll go back to what I said previously. There is no reason why those first two overall aims of this independent review, which the women would say is not independent, could not be done in tandem with a statutory inquiry into issues that have presented in the past.
Would you not end up precluding some of what the statutory inquiry would be doing, though? Because if you have the government, you know, actively, you might argue from a legal sense it will be moving the goalposts while at the same time a full statutory investigation is trying to get to the bottom of them.
No, I don't believe that. I mean, you said yourself, sometimes statutory inquiries can take considerably longer, and this piece of work as proposed by the government is due to have an interim report within 6 months and a final report within 9. They could fit very well together, and they should, if managed properly, fit very well together and complement each other, which would give us both answers to both questions as being put forward, the current experience that's there, but also that the older, the historic experience. So you are in effect meeting the needs of all the complainants, those who are currently going through the system, and those, as you said yourself, who have experienced a delay in justice, which is justice denied at the other end. And in that case, we would have a much rounder position and a much more effective position to ensure that mechanisms that are put in place in the future are then reviewed on an ongoing basis, but also meets the needs that's there. Where defence forces are changing and will continue to change over the next 10, 15, 20 years, and that is correct and right.
Yeah.
But the procedures that are there also to support and protect those who serve also need to change over a period of time.
And I want to come to the future of the Defence Force as well for just a minute, but just one other question before I get on to that. If it makes sense, and you make a reasonable argument for dealing with these issues on multiple fronts and that you don't have to wait for this preliminary inquiry to report back before you were to address some of those issues, why do you believe the government isn't doing that? Because I presume that those are the same arguments that the Women of Honour themselves will have made to Simon Coveney and to Micheál Martin, and evidently they are not being received as they expect to be.
And it's a very good question. I think it's probably a question, though, for the Taoiseach and for the Minister for Defence. I mean, initially, in the aftermath of that programme being aired, there was assurances given by the Minister in the Dáil that it was a big priority for him, that he was committed to delivering real change and to working with the women. And yet, over a period of time, and there was a number of meetings that took place, what the women themselves would say was that there was a change of attitude. They felt that they were being dismissed, that they were being put in the long finger, and once they had requested legal representation to be able, because they're not professionals at this, Gavin, they never wanted to be in the public domain speaking about these issues that fundamentally changed their lives in many ways because they lost careers. But once they asked for the legal representation to be present, to be able to talk them through almost in layperson's terms what was happening, there was a change of attitude by the Minister and from the Department. And when they were given that commitment initially that they would be involved in setting the terms of reference, what they were presented with was a fait accompli. It was done. It had been agreed. There was a statement put out by the minister that other stakeholders had agreed to this, and how they were then somehow the problem almost again because they weren't agreeing to do it. When the reality is, we wouldn't be having this conversation if it wasn't for the bravery, the courage, and coming forward of those women to put this out there into such a public domain and to have their stories and their raw history put out there into the public for it to be the topic of conversations over dinner tables.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes a lot of bravery to be prepared to even bring it to that public level, as you say. Just while I have you, and obviously you're the Sinn Féin spokesperson on defence, I wanted to get your thoughts on what we heard last weekend about the report in the Commission of the Future of the Defence Forces. It obviously still hasn't been published. We're waiting to see exactly what it will say. But there were reports that it was going to outline that the Defence Forces, as they currently stand, effectively not fit for purpose, and outlining options where spending would have to be increased by anywhere between 50% and 300% over the next decade. Sinn Féin is a very vocal and staunch supporter of Irish neutrality. Do you think that it's possible to do both?
I do, and I think it's vital that we do both. We are in geographic a very unique position to compare to other countries in Europe. And you look at a map, we're an island facing out into the Atlantic by ourselves. But when we talk about investment into the defence forces, there is a number of areas that we need to look at when we do that. So we can look at investment into technology, we look at investment into equipment, and again, the arena that we're asking our defence forces to operate in is changing all the time. There's the cyber. Cyber falls under the Department of Transport at the minute instead of under defence, and there will be questions that need to be asked about that as well. But fundamentally, one of the biggest issues facing the defence forces, and this has been highlighted repeatedly by groups such as RACO and PD4, is the failure of successive governments to invest in the most valuable asset that the defence forces has, and that's the people. And we see that presenting itself across the board, whether it's in the Navy, the Air Corps, the Army. There is now 1,000 under strength at the moment. Yeah. Some would argue that the actual established strength number is below where it should be anyway.
But you think it is possible to massively invest in personnel and in capabilities and in naval fleet and air fleet and all of that, potentially quadrupling the spending that's currently there, that can all be justified and is constructive, even in a circumstance where Ireland is still militarily neutral?
Being militarily neutral does not undermine or take away from our responsibilities in terms of our territorial waters, in terms of our economic waters. And they are an ask that we place on the Navy, who we know at times have struggled to actually put ships to sea because of a lack of personnel. That is simply not good enough. Nor is it good enough that you have somebody who spends their career serving this state and their security in receipt of work and family payment. That is absolutely not on. What is also not on is when you hear of those who are serving at the moment being given 10 days notice to do an overseas mission. That's not on either. As I'll say it again, the greatest asset the Defence Forces has is its people, and they are the ones who need to be prioritised for investment in the equipment, the technology, the cyber. That change in aspect of defence will continue to change. However, we have a responsibility to those who serve in our Defence Forces to ensure that they are no longer in need of work and family payment, that they can put shoes on their children's feet, a roof over their head, and food on the table.
All right, we will leave it there. Circa Clark, Sinn Féin TD and spokesperson on defence, thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime on The Record.
On The Record on News Talk.
Brought to you by PwC. Great minds think unalike. Different skill sets, diverse opinions, it all adds up to the new equation.